Hey folks, Nicole here. We usually leave it to Mark to record these preambles, but I've noticed he's been mildly abusing this power. This is what happens when you record a whole season of content ahead of time. The two of us had such a blast recording season one of Nevermind the Music, and we're gearing up for season two. Subscribe to our show, and hey, maybe you even have an elder millennial nerd in your life that loves music composition and psychology as much as us. Share a favorite episode with them and help us spread the word. Also, feel free to rate and review this podcast or certain episodes so we know what you'd like to hear more of in the future. Look at me using my preamble power for good. $20, says Mark's going to chime in here and tell you that you have to rate and review us. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Hey everybody, Mark here. This sidetrack comes from our conversation about T-Pain. We're talking about authenticity, and specifically authenticity in the classroom. Nicole brings up how she approaches tough conversations in her classrooms, and whether we, the professors, should be really making our opinions known on tough topics. Not as many laugh out loud moments in this episode, but if you really need one, just go back and find that YouTube video from the mid-2000s of the dramatic chipmunk. Though I think technically it's a prairie dog.
Yeah. So I can talk about Kanye West through that lens, but just I'm thinking about when you talk about authenticity and you talk about auto-tuning, I think about the level of authenticity I hold with my students. And I was wondering if you would want to have a conversation.
Yeah, do we want to pause? So like, because like Kanye, let's come back another time. I think eventually we'll probably have a Kanye episode. Lots of good stuff there. So you want to talk about with regards to the students, because yeah, there's lots to talk about.
Well, I think about auto-tuning and authenticity, and we're kind of towing into that conversation. Like, can you be a good singer and be auto-tuned and all of this stuff? And I think about how it is just like a tool in your toolkit as a performer, and I think about teaching as performance quite a bit. And I wonder in myself how much I allow myself to be purely authentic with my students, specifically around like touchier topics. You know, we teach very different subjects.
Like not auto-tune, but whether Kanye is the voice of the generation.
Yeah,
touchy.
Like, yeah. Should I? And as that example, like, I kind of went at that kid and, like, argued with him and, like, tried to prove my point and tried to change his point of view. And it didn't work. And I just alienated him and probably half the class. And then it became this whole joke throughout the semester, like, oh, professor, whatever, she doesn't get it. Like, she listens to Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, like, whatever. And then I stopped doing things like that. Like, as I actively stopped when people had an opinion in class that Nicole disagreed with, I didn't let Professor Vacher show my disagreement. Mm.
So this is interesting. I mean, first of all, I teach music majors. Mm. What drives you to become a music major and to become a professional musician eventually is probably obsessing about certain music or whatever. So almost everybody walking in the door has like crazy ideas about some artist. So like, they have some artist that has inspired them so much to learn an instrument or to learn how to make beats or to learn how to sing. And so I get a lot of students that are really into an artist, and maybe that's an artist that I'm like, yeah, hell yeah, that's a good artist. Or maybe, I mean, shout out to one of my students. You know who you are. You might be listening. Super into nu metal.
Okay.
Mark famously wasn't a huge fan of nu metal. He is an example of a student that I will joke around. Yeah. Oh yeah, you love that nu metal. You know, I kind of... Most of the time, I don't even joke around with it because it's like this thing is so important to that person. I may think that it's trash or nu metal is not trash, but I may not get it. But I steer clear of that comment because I'm surrounded by people who are like, well, Kanye is the best thing ever. Yeah. Well, Kendrick's the best thing ever. Well, Drake's the best thing ever. Well, no, we talked about that. Yeah, music majors don't like Drake. Anyways, go back to what you were saying.
But I think that our fields are different. In that, like, I don't know, music is hugely personal for people, so maybe not so much. But in my classes, like, we talk about very real, like, social issues, very
mental
topical
health,
things,
like
mental
trauma,
health.
Yeah, everything, I would
you
think.
You know, that so many people are affected by, and you just kind of never know what people are carrying around with them, and you never know what people's backgrounds are. And to offend someone in this current college climate could be career-ending for a teacher. Like, if you say the wrong thing to somebody and they come at you, and, you know, not to like bring up cancel culture, but like even Title IX is covered, like there's liability in for a teacher.
Do you want to explain Title IX real quick?
Title IX is a law protecting people's rights in an educational setting to protect them against bias.
And it leads to so many things, like women's sports grow out of that, like the the college collegiate, like making things more
accessible,
fair and accessible
for gender. And in my school, so any sort of discrimination to project against bias in the classroom. Sure. In an educational setting. But, you know, if Nicole decides one day to go up and stand up for Israeli or Palestinian rights in the classroom, and I have Israeli nationals in my class and they feel that I'm discriminating against them, that's a valid feeling for them to have. And they could put a complaint against me and I could lose my job. And it's their right to do that, for sure. Personally, I don't think it's a professor's job to insert their opinion into the college classroom. If it's about music or mental health or current events, I think it's a professor's job to facilitate a conversation among their students and not input their own ideas into that conversation. And I'm an outlier.
Right. So you're juxtaposing that against the notion of it being, you're saying, like, because you started talking about authenticity,
yes.
Right? So like, you are sort of purposefully being inauthentic.
Yes.
But I feel like you're being a facilitator. Like, what kind of facilitator would you be if you started the facilitation?
You're wrong.
Like, okay, everybody, to give you a little too much information, I'm a department chair. I am not only a music professor, I am the department chair of a department that has a lot of different subjects in it, right?
Sure.
Music, theater, a bunch of different classes. There's like, I'm facilitating a department meeting or whatever. There's the item that I bring up, where I either go, what does everybody think? Or there are the times when I start with, here's the plan that I came up with. What do you all think?
Right.
And did I start by asking for everybody's feedback, or did I start with a suggestion to let them react to? And one of those things is me being a facilitator.
Mm-hmm.
The other, I'm not really being a facilitator. When I'm like, here's the class that I authored, everybody. Will you give me feedback? That is not the same as, can we build this together? And I think in the classroom, our role might be different, right?
Like, I think it is. And I think that in the classroom, our role is to be unbiased and to hear everyone's opinion and to make sure everyone who wants to say something feels like they are in a space to say it. I always trip over the term safe space. I don't love it because there are situations that it's not a safe space. Like, if I'm in a class and I know that there's a Palestinian national in my class and an Israeli national in my class, that is not a safe space to have that discussion, because those people have family overseas that are in danger right now.
Right.
And like, no matter if I say, OK, guys, we're all going to leave this in the classroom. This is a safe space. You can say whatever you want. It's not. If I'm teaching a neuroscience class, there's no charge in our mission that says that we should talk about geopolitical conflict. That's nowhere coming up in our syllabus.
Well, but it's tough because it is for certain other classes, right?
Yeah, so for some.
In the same way that like me randomly bringing up mental health and bipolar disorder or Alzheimer's or all sorts of things randomly in my class would cause collateral damage almost to a student that, like, let's say was experiencing that in their family right now. And it's, why are you bringing this up? Whereas your class, those topics might be actually literally essential.
Well,
right?
And there have been times that I give a lot of content warning, both in my syllabus right up front, just to try to manufacture a place to be very authentic, to say, hey, you know, in May for a week, we're going to talk about eating disorders. I know statistically there are people in this class that are affected by eating disorders. There has to be. It's a numbers game, right? So if that's something that's going to be challenging for you, know that we do have to cover it. If you can't be here that day, just let me know. And I've had plenty of students do that, but it's problematic in my field because I'm meant to train people to be counselors. That's my job. And in that industry, you're going to talk about eating disorders. You're going to talk about bipolar and borderline and suicide. You're going to talk about all those things.
So in that case, they almost have to have that conversation, even if they don't feel safe.
Or they need to find a way to mask their own feelings about it and kind of compartmentalize their own feelings about it to be able to address it clinically with other people. And that's incredibly hard to do. It's incredibly hard.
And you choose when that's worth confronting.
You choose like the risk and reward. Like, am I emotionally available? Like, there are certain topics I can't touch. I just can't. I can't really work with addicts because I lost too many friends.
Yeah.
If, you know, real talk, I can't really talk to people that are going through like cancer treatment because I lost a lot of people in my life to cancer. It's really hard for me to have objective conversations about that. So I chose not to. I have a path that doesn't involve those conversations. But in certain courses, like, you do need to talk about certain things, and it can be really hard for some students, for sure. And it's hard to teach them to bottle up for a minute just so we can get to the content.
I mean, on that whole thing, like, we're talking about what our role is as facilitators or even just people out in the world. To what extent do you, like, just let the students talk about stuff? Because I found that there are times that, like, I don't bring up sociopolitical stuff very often in my class, but I have to sometimes when I teach a rock and roll history class. We have to talk about cultural appropriation. We have to talk about the 60s, you know, civil rights era. We have to talk about racism and all that in all sorts of.
So your question, to what extent is, do I initiate a conversation?
Yeah, like, I found myself, but like, you've already established, like, you're not usually the one who's giving the first word. But I found in that class specifically, as much as I can bias the conversation by setting the tone, I found, especially in my fully online classes, the first person to talk establishes the norms.
Yeah.
And that person not being me, which, because I don't think it should be me if I ask like a really like high level question. Mm-hmm. I don't need to feed them my own biases, but they're getting the bias of the first. And I'll give you an example in a second, but I just wanted your thoughts of it.
Of like, I have a strategy on how to handle that. It's like, if, say, we're talking about something that's more topical and more close to home for my students, and the first person gives a point of view that's very strong, and maybe they're, I mean, if we're in person, honestly, it's funny, but like, leaders typically are the tallest, malest, cisgendered male in the room is someone that's going to assert themselves in an authority position. That's just statistically what's going to happen. So
is that statistically true, even in classroom spaces and things like that?
The tallest, most cisgendered, usually Caucasian male.
Wow.
Will establish dominance for sure. And like, people will default to a leadership position. If you put 5 students in a group and one of them's a tall white man and the rest are shorter females, the male is going to default to a leadership position 9 times out of 10.
This is interesting, like in the higher ed context where I might be the only man in a meeting of 10 people, just because there's a lot of women in higher ed, especially, I would say, especially white women, though not only white women. And there's other men on campus and stuff, but, you know, I'm not the provost of the college, but I am a department chair, you know, I have some position of authority anyway. So
what I do is, like, you know, say Cole, call him Cole, because in my head, a tall white man's name is Cole, expresses his opinion.
Brad,
Chad, if you were, as it were.
Jake.
Jake. Cool. I'll say that's a strong point of view. Who has an opposing point of view that they'd like to share? And that will open up, that will cue the class to know that I don't necessarily agree with this person. It's not about me agreeing with them. It's about me hearing them. Oh, I heard that you shared this opinion. That seemed like a really strong opinion. Does anyone have a question for him? Or does anyone have a different opinion that they'd like to share, or a different point of view that they'd like to share? And that, like, facilitates a dialogue and teaches students to, if you're going to go after something, don't go after Chad. Go after Chad's point of view, right? Go after what he said.
Again, I'm thinking of my rock and roll history class, which now I only teach online. If anybody wants to enroll in, look me up. So it's only online, which changes the dynamics.
Yeah.
But we have these discussions, right? And we've talked about these in other episodes when we were talking about AI and hilarious wrong answers and all that. But I'll do these discussions, and I used to be a part of the discussions in a much more effective way. But me in there typing away my thoughts on, you know, whether I think Stairway to Heaven is plagiarized or whatever, is just making them think they know the correct answer I'm looking for. So I tend to not chime in unless I really need to. And
or you can set it so they can't see other responses until they respond. so you know that you're getting like their opinion and not.
But like I'm asking them to generate their own initial. Sure. Anyway, and I want them to read each other's posts before they post it. Yeah. Anyways, the issue is like I'll warm up with sort of softballs and eventually I'll get to questions mm-hmm. that are a little more, you know, saucy or whatever. And the specific one I'm thinking of right now is there's a chapter in the book that that talks about Southern rock and stuff like that in the early 70s in particular. And they talk about Lynyrd Skynyrd with the Confederate flag on stage. And I ask pretty open-endedly, like, what do you think about the use of a symbol that is offensive? You know, the whole idea of like, oh, is the Confederate flag a symbol of Southern pride or is it a symbol of racism? Is a Confederate battle flag of the Confederacy? All this question, like, mm-hmm. what do you think of an artist and understanding that this is 40, 50 years ago, right? And what I've noticed over the years that I've taught that class, and it's been a little while now, the first person to post, because it's asynchronous, right? We're not mm-hmm. all in a Zoom call. Someone will post on Monday, someone will post on Tuesday. The first person like determines the tenor of the conversation. Mm-hmm. And I'm in Boston and it's an online class, so there might be people outside, but for the most part, you know, it's a blue state. You think you know, but Boston, those of you who know Boston know that Boston's not exactly San Francisco or whatever, or Portland, Oregon, in terms of people's attitudes, though, honestly, those cities have their challenges also. So one semester, someone will be like, I think the Confederate flag is an abomination and da da da. And then everybody, 20 something people in the class, Confederate flag is an abomination, da 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 da. Mm-hmm. They've given social permission to everybody to hate the Confederate flag. And then the next semester, someone will be like, you know what? I think people should be able to celebrate their culture, even if, and then the next person, yes, people should be able to celebrate their culture. Lynyrd Skynyrd should use that Confederate flag.
You should assign them groups, say that group A has to say pro and group wild. B has to say con.
Yeah, you know, I keep thinking that one, I go in and out of whether it's worth asking because I think people are scared of speaking fully on that topic once someone has given, and it's not like people are being racist or whatever. I've had only a couple issues.
Oh, yeah.
But people, they've stopped feeling comfortable to say what's on their mind once they've seen like two other people show that their opinion may not be correct.
And imagine if
approved.
One of those other people is their professor that's in a position of authority in the classroom that's in charge in their eyes of issuing them their grades, which we all know as teachers that I don't give you grades, you earn them. And it really is just numbers. That's how I grade, but whatever.
But you can't be 100% sure that's always right. And from their perspective.
Yeah. And I mean, I take great lengths to take any implicit bias out of my grading. I grade blind. I use a rubric. I have inter-rater reliability, which means I'll have a TA grade as well, and we'll combine our scores. Like I do more than others to make sure that, because I do have favorite students. I mean, I'm sorry, but I do. And I don't want my favoritism to affect the grades. That's not fair, right? That's not best practice. So I also, in terms of best practices as an educator, I check myself so much to make sure that I am not sharing my opinions with the class about politics or pop or anything that's happening in the news, because it changes how they view me. It changes the conversations we can have in the classroom. And those conversations are so important for the students' development. And it's something that is, for me, the biggest challenge in teaching, because I struggle with being authentic and holding my cards really close to my chest.
So that's what I was going to ask. So you brought this up from the perspective of authenticity.
Yes.
I do not think of this struggle of, ooh, how much of my opinion do I give? I don't think of that struggle as a struggle for authenticity. But when you frame it that way, it feels like a deficit that you're causing. You're suffering, you're causing yourself. Like, is it worth it? In my field, it's just so much less. It's not even, I'm not teaching music history or music politics and music or whatever. I'm teaching music theory and songwriting and stuff. And it's just a lot easier for me to not have those conversations be every single day I'm in the class.
There's potential for me to have those conversations every single day I'm in my classroom, for sure, just with the content that I cover.
And your classes are going to be relevant to current events in a way that mine are less and less. People want to talk about.
And also my
Swift
students,
and,
just
and
I think
Kansas
a psychology
City
student versus a music student is like, that's what they want, man. They want a deep dive. Yeah. They want to get in. They want real, real talk about real intense things. Like, that's just the culture of the students I work with. And I love that. And I love that. You know me. I love that deep dive, too. And I love that real talk. And I feel like as a teacher, I have to be relatively inauthentic in that because it's not my job to politic. It's not my job to soapbox. It's to give them a venue to soapbox on their own and to teach them the skills to do that effectively.
Yeah.
And it's a challenge. And I think that to tie it into the topic that we're covering here, I think that feels like it might be T-Pain's challenge a little bit too, to struggle with being like, no, I'm a good singer. For me, Nicole, I know my opinions are strong opinions. And I know they're rooted in truth. And I know that I could convince a team of undergraduate students to think the way I think, but I'm choosing not to because it's not good for them.
Okay, Nicole, the outro credits, except this time you're from Boston and I'm from SoCal. Nevermind the Music is like totally hosted by me, Mark Papany, and Nicole Vatcher. I also totally produce. Please be sure to subscribe and leave us a rating and a review.
We're on social media. If you want to leave us a message, you can. We don't really care. We're at Never Music Pod on all major platforms. You can also send us an email at nevermusicpod@gmail.com. Once in a while, we'll check our email and do a mailbag episode for you. So please let us know if you have any questions. We'll try to answer them.
You're going to be all like, you can't get there if I'm here. Your mother's here. All right, Mark.
Thanks for listening.
Hey everyone, David here. Severance is back. The Lorehounds are partnering with Properly Howard to bring you in-depth weekly coverage of season 2. Join me, John, Anthony, and Steve as we unpack every twist, theory, and revelation. We've created a dedicated feed just for our Severance coverage. Simply search for Severance Lorehounds in your podcast app, or find the direct link in our link tree. Our weekly episodes dig deep into the show's mysteries, themes, and bigger questions about identity and consciousness that makes Severance so compelling. Season Pass and regular community subscribers get ad-free access to our weekly episodes, plus exclusive content like our Supply Closet bonus series, featuring fascinating conversations with experts like the team from Nevermind the Music. We've explored the neuroscience of memory and personality, decoded the hidden meanings in the show's musical themes, and there's much more to come. You'll also get Steve and Anthony's complete season 1 rewatch series. We believe in total transparency with our listeners. And unlike mammalians nurturable, we're happy to share all of our secrets. Find the link for the Severance feed in the show notes below, or search Severance Lorehounds wherever you get your podcasts. Come theorize with us about what's really happening at Lumen.